if it doesn't totally work out, you still have all your skills that you had before, and you still have all the jobs that are on your resume from before. So you can still get back into something.
Hello, friends. It's Dana and Angela, and welcome back to Working Progress Podcast. If this is your first time here, welcome. We're so glad you're joining us. If you're thinking about a career change or just curious how some people change their paths, this is the right podcast for you. Every week, we invite a guest who's been through major career changes to our podcast, and we ask them how they did it. We share their stories here so you can do the same for yourself. And if you haven't already, subscribe for more interviews and share this with someone who can benefit from it. And now to today's guest, Lauren. Before Lauren switched to creating beautiful ceramics full-time, she worked in the restaurant and hospitality industry for 15 years. She graduated with a Bachelor of Fine Arts in Ceramics and a Bachelor of Science in Arts Education, so she's been working with clay since college. While pursuing her career in the Caribbean, she took a break from it. And when she moved back to the States, she started working in a studio again, but just part-time for a couple of hours a week. However, something changed that encouraged Lauren to take the leap, and she started working in the studio full-time in November of 2019, which is so exciting because that was just literally a few weeks before we spoke to her. I am thrilled to share her stories with you, and I hope her story inspires you just like it did for me. Without further ado, this is Lauren's working progress story. Thank you, Lauren, for joining us today, and welcome everybody to this episode. So we're talking to Lauren today because we found her profile on Instagram, and she has an interesting story to share with us. She is going through, actually, I should probably let Lauren tell her story, but from what I understand, Lauren is going through a career transition. So maybe we could start by telling us a little bit about what you're doing and what you did in the past.
Sure. So we'll start with, I think, past stuff first. So I have had a career in the restaurant and hospitality industry for about 15 years, and have worked every position in a restaurant, you know, starting when I was in college to, you know, pay college bills. So you know, hosting and kind of doing all the stuff in the restaurants up to management levels. And then I took a position down at a really high-end fine dining restaurant down in the Caribbean and moved from the United States down to the Caribbean for what I thought was just going to be a year. But I ended up staying down there for about 6.5 years running this restaurant and kind of getting into the more nitty-gritty side of the restaurant world, and then made a transition back to the States and kind of found myself still in that industry, working as a GM at another pretty high-end farm-to-table restaurant, and yeah, have been doing hospitality consulting work and just basically in that industry for my entire life, working life. And now have transitioned, into my ceramic studio pretty full time. I went to school for ceramics, so I have a BFA in ceramics, and you know, have made work on and off, but never really kind of thought it was going to transition into a career. And made the leap finally. Nice. Yeah.
And so it seems like you spent a lot of time in the previous career, in the restaurant career, before you made the switch. And so you were already kind of doing this on the side when you were still working in a restaurant. Is that correct?
I actually, I took a break from making ceramic work for probably 8 or 9 years. So there were no facilities where I was living down in the Caribbean. So had to put it on the back burner. And yeah, just kind of had dabbled in it after college and loved it. I also had a teaching degree, so I was teaching art as well. But you know, it's a hard transition to go full time into being an artist. It's not easy, and I think it's a pretty scary leap for a lot of people because it's has a lot of variables to say the least.
So I can imagine.
Yeah.
And when you said that you, so you're now full time, you work at the studio full time now. And when did that start?
November 1st.
Right.
So
yeah.
Very recently.
It's just like 3 weeks ago, really.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's about 3 weeks ago. That's amazing. Congrats.
Yeah. Thank you.
How is it so far?
It's great. It's a lot of work. It's definitely, you know, there's a lot of setup. And a lot of kind of processes that are happening just in terms of, you know, social media and marketing and website building. And I was lucky enough that I was working in the studio, not full time, but making work pretty regularly for the last year and a half. So I got to pretty, you know, nicely fine tune my aesthetic and where I wanted the direction of my work to go, which was really nice. And so, yeah, now I'm just kind of finalizing the nitty gritty business side of it, which is, you know, just as important as making the actual work. So.
I see. Okay. So you've been kind of working, I guess, part time in the studio for a year and a half. And now you just on November 1st, you just made the switch.
Yes.
That's super exciting.
Yeah.
How did you start working in the ceramic studio again?
So I moved back to the States and, you know, had kind of this piece that was missing in my life and was trying to figure out what that was and realized that it was the artistic side of things that I hadn't been able to do for a while. So I started researching in the area if there were any studios available. And stumbled upon a studio that was open pretty close to where I was living and actually found out that it was a woman who I had gone to school with. And I hadn't spoken to her in probably about 10 years. And so we reconnected and I started, working out of her studio. So that's kind of how I fell back into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And when you said you worked in the studio, you were making ceramics, you were making or you were selling things.
So yeah, I mean, at that point I was just in the studio making work, just to kind of get back into it again, because I hadn't touched clay in like 8 or 9 years. So I transitioned back in the studio, and was really lucky. Actually, I started doing a work exchange for her. So I wasn't actually paying for studio space. And was doing, you know, a couple hours a week of just studio maintenance and firing kilns to have access to the studio. So I was in a really nice spot because I was able to transition back into a studio and not spend a lot of money on kind of all the things that you need to purchase and buy to set up a studio. And I was able to start to make work again and make mistakes and make work that was really ugly and,
part of the process.
Part of the process and work that, you know, wasn't good and, really start to kind of, like I said before, hone in and kind of tune in to the aesthetic that I wanted to kind of start to pursue. It was a really sweet transition kind of back into making.
Would you say that, let's say if somebody has absolutely no background or education or experience in ceramics or pottery, and all of a sudden today I want to jump in and just start making something, how do I teach myself, or, you know, like, how do I improve on aesthetics, and, you know, like, how do I, like, yeah, essentially teach myself to make better products?
Yeah. I mean, if you are like a complete beginner, you know, I've never touched clay before, this is a brand new venture, you know, my suggestion is definitely going to find a studio and take a lesson for sure. You know, there's kind of two different techniques that you can use in clay. You know, hand building, which is just, you know, basically what it sounds like. So you're just building any sort of forms or objects just out of clay, you know, with just your hand and basic tools. And then what I'm doing is, you know, actually making stuff on a wheel. So it's, you know, wheel thrown stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, going in and taking a class, I think is for the technique, just because ceramics is, it's super technical and there are a lot of different, steps and stages and, you know, processes that can go wrong kind of in making. And so that I think is the first thing, but then, you know, really just, I think understanding aesthetic is a big part of it. And that's really, you know, just what do you like, you know, are there things like, are you into architecture? Are you into, you know, what type of art are you into, or are you into plants and foliage and texture and color? You know, there's just like endless, you know, things that kind of drive, I think, artistic aesthetic. And a lot of times it's everyday objects for people, you know? So yeah.
And what's special about ceramics in particular? So I took, I remember taking ceramics in high school and I was not very good at it. But I remember that definitely being very difficult, and like what I wanted to make never turned out to be what I would like it to look like, I guess. So yeah. I can definitely like relate to the part where you said it's very technical. But I feel like you have a really good foundation for like perhaps to like pursue other forms of art, or like, you know, explore other different types of artistic outlets. What drew you back to ceramics?
I think, I mean, being in the food industry for so long and just working with some of the most incredible chefs, and seeing their form of art in, you know, in the vision of like how they create their food and how they put their food together and textures that are created and flavors, and then they go into plating and it's this like whole other art form. I mean, it's so stunningly beautiful when you kind of work with these chefs that are so detail oriented. And for me, I was looking at, you know, this dinnerware that we were serving food on and thinking about, you know, what could be improved, what could be changed, you know, how we could make the diner's experience more exciting, you know, how you could really link, you know, the food that was going out on a handmade object that was also, you know, an art form. Mm-hmm. So kind of getting back to just, you know, this kind of art link that happens within the food industry and, you know, ceramics and art industry, you know, it's really this just like beautiful artistic form across, you know, multiple facets basically. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just that clay comes out of the earth, you know, it's dug out of the ground, just like these, you know, the vegetables are being dug out of the ground. So I think there's this beautiful kind of rootedness that happens surrounding, you know, Mother Earth, and just kind of everything is really coming back full circle. And so that was, you know, that's important to me, I think, in making my work and creating my work as well. Just looking at the plate as kind of a palette and a canvas for chefs and even for people who are at home, you know, just cooking a regular dinner, you know, being able to put whatever you've created into a beautiful object, and sit down with it, enjoy it, and really have it work for the dish that you're, you know, eating, I think is really important. And there's, you know, I could go on and talk about just like technical stuff and, you know, thinking about how your fork feels when it touches a plate, or how your spoon moves in a bowl a certain way. you know, when you're drinking out of a cup, like how wide is the cup? How thick is the lip? Is it dribbling water when you drink out of it? You know, just there's like all of these kind of touch factors that happen and, like sensory factors that happen when you're eating and dining. And it's not just about what you're, you know, what you're actually eating. It's about all of the other things that are going on too in that experience.
There's this coffee shop that I like to go to, and I love the ambiance and how, you know, like the smell of coffee, the light, the people, the everything. But what really stood out for me for that place that I like to go to is their mugs that they use and the plates and the little dishes. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that they all come from the same store. So I asked them once, where do you guys get your mugs from? And then they told me it's from this place. And so I went and looked it up, and they have a factory in California. And then we actually went for a tour. They do tours like occasionally. So you get to see the factory. Yeah. And the guy was explaining what makes their ceramics special is when you touch them, like the ceramics feel kind of warm, or there's like a certain temperature, it doesn't feel cold. I mean, what you said just reminded me of that experience. And when I think back on like the times I, you know, like hold their mugs, it sounds kind of weird, but it really does feel different. It feels like the mugs are heavier and it just feels more dense. And for me, it just feels very warm. I just imagine, you know, holding the cup. I just link that to drinking from, you know, maybe a mug of hot chocolate or something. It just really creates that, it creates a really good feeling. So it's true that like drinking or food and wine and dining, it's not just the food and wine, it's everything combined that creates the whole experience.
Yeah, it's true. And I think something for, you know, for a lot of people, they buy pieces of pottery because it transports them back to a space and time that they want to remember. And I think, you know, you have that experience in a certain coffee shop somewhere and you buy a mug from there, you know, every time you drink out of that mug in your house or, you know, in a space, you remember, and you remember that experience that you've had. And I think that that's, you know, the beautiful thing about handmade objects and, is that they really do hold kind of place and time for people, which is pretty beautiful.
And so you were able to use the studio to make work. And at the time, were you were just kind of honing in on your personal aesthetic. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
How long did it take you to, you know, from, you know, this is something that I used to do for a while, but I feel a little out of touch, to the point where you feel like, okay, I'm fully ready to be, you know, like 100% doing this full time. And I'm assuming like at that point, you probably were pretty confident in your products and you were perhaps maybe like selling some of them. Like how long did it take you to kind of build up the confidence and then also to kind of like refamiliarize yourself with the skills?
Yeah. I mean, it was like riding a bike, you know, that I hadn't been on in a very long time. you know, so much of it is muscle memory. So it does come back pretty quickly. But I think, you know, understanding what I wanted to make took, you know, a bit of time. Like it took me a couple months to really feel good in the studio. And then I actually got a really big order for a bunch of mugs and vases for a property that was opening. And I was like, okay, well, looks like we have to do this. So, you know, some of it was, trial and error. I had never done production pottery before. So like creating like lots of the same pieces. Mm-hmm. And this was like 150 piece mug order.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So it was intimidating at first, for sure. I'm not going to lie, because it was scary. And I was just like, I don't know why they picked me. But they did. And I ended up collaborating with a designer who was working on the project to create the, you know, the shape and kind of feel of the mugs, which was another you know, another thing I had never done before, I'd never done any pretty collaborative pieces where, you know, we went back and forth on kind of the design and the aesthetic and what the handle was going to look like and the size and the color, and texture. So that was also new. But you know, I think anybody who's kind of jumping into like a new career, there's days when you're like, oh, this is what I'm doing. This is great. I feel mm-hmm. amazing on top of the world. And then there's days, you know, where you have bad days, or you have days where you're maybe not making things that you're totally excited about. But I think, you know, just being confident in loving what you do, I think that's a big part of it. You know, I think also having a background in restaurants and also, you know, having the business side of things, mm-hmm. you know, also in restaurants has helped tremendously. If you would have asked me right out of college, like, hey, do you think you could start a business? I mean, I would have had no clue.
Right.
So I think, you know, that's a thing that's helped too, is being, you know, in this kind of career path before that gave me a lot of skills to, you know, accelerate kind of into this a bit quicker, which has been great too.
Yeah. Cause I feel like being in the restaurant, you need to talk to many different people. So you need to be comfortable talking to many different people and not just your coworkers who are probably coming from somewhat similar background as you. Yeah. You need to talk to customers, you need to talk to vendors. And so I think I can see that being a very good training for opening up your own restaurant and being able to, I guess, work under stress in general.
Yeah. Yeah. Huge. I think everybody should work in a restaurant at some point in their lives.
Yeah. I think Angela would agree.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Yeah. Even though it was really definitely a very short time. Like, I think I only worked in there for like probably 3 weeks, but it's definitely a lot to learn if you want to learn, obviously. And I think it really trains you on multiple levels and really like just your ability to do multiple things at once. You just like literally level up after you actually work at a restaurant. And I guess I'm really curious about what your typical day to day is like right now. So can you walk us through like what a typical day looks like?
Yeah. You know, right now it kind of ebbs and flows. I have a big makers market at the beginning of December that I am prepping for. So, you know, the last couple weeks have been, you know, 6 to 8 hour studio days, pretty much 7 days a week. Just trying to kind of like bump up for this sale and this show that's happening. You know, so you're making a lot of pieces and, you know, you start to get really picky with your work. So, and because ceramics is so process oriented, there are many stages where things can kind of go wrong, and pieces can break or not come out properly. And so you really end up wanting to make about 25% more than you want to have. Just kind of as a rule of thumb, just in case. So, yeah, I mean, really kind of going into the studio, you know, early and throwing and making work. And, you know, there's a big part of ceramics that is also all about timing and, you know, how things are drying out and what things need to be finished and trimmed. So it's a lot of juggling, kind of similarly to being in a restaurant. You know, you'll throw 20 to 30 pieces and then maybe you have 20 pieces from the day before that need handles put on them. So then, you know, you'll finish throwing and then you'll pull handles and then the handles have to set up. So maybe you'll go and do something else. And so you're kind of like constantly bouncing around the studio, working on pieces at different points in the process. So yeah, my days have just been lots of making, firing kilns and glazing, and also, you know, really just finalizing you know, new business cards and POS system for sales and mm-hmm. how I'm going to set up my display. You know, cause this maker's market that's coming up is my first one. So, you know, as kind of a full-time solo ceramic artist. So, yeah, kind of a big deal and a little scary, but also very exciting. So
is it kind of like a trade show where I'm picturing things in my head, so I have no idea if this is right at all, but is it like a trade show where all of the artists just kind of like bring their work to kind of showcase and display in some kind of like portfolio for people to see and check out? And then, you know, obviously potential buyers would be going to these trade shows.
Yeah. So the one that I'm in is actually, like it's a sale. So it's a maker's market where people are actually like, we're selling work there. So, it's strictly for, people who work and live and make work in the city that I live in. Uh-huh. And so, there's about 60 artists that are going to be there, in this really big music venue, and there's like food vendors and music, and it's pretty amazing and pretty special, and the work that's in it is really pretty impressive and high quality. So yeah, so we're selling stuff.
And it's in early December.
Yeah, it's December 5th.
Wow. Yeah. Do you have a specialization? Like, do you focus on producing only certain types of products?
So right now, I pretty much am doing pretty a heavy push on like mugs and cups and mm-hmm. bowls. But I've been doing some pretty awesome personalized like dinnerware sets for people. And I had a chef that I worked with, that I did a bunch. I did, I think like 90 pieces for him for a tasting menu he was doing. So we sat down and collaborated on some dishes for this tasting menu. So we were like picked out three of the dishes off his tasting menu and kind of walked through the setup of them. And then we drew, you know, out what he wanted them to go into. And I made a bunch of samples and we picked and I produced work for him. So
that's amazing. So when you design these pieces with maybe a designer or perhaps like a requester or somebody that's, you know, purchasing the work from you, how much do you focus on the actual, like, I guess, look and feel versus the functionality? And then, you know, like, I guess, aspects that make a certain mug, for example, a better mug. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just like thinking about the trade-offs because you mentioned, you know, sometimes when you're using a utensil, you can kind of feel like, you know, how substantial it is and how thick certain things are. And then, you know, I kind of feel that we all tend to prefer things that are a little bit heavier than, you know, like the super thin and light, feeling kind of a utensil. How much do you kind of, or how often do you have to play that trade-off, and who dictates that? Do you have like your own certain standard that, you know, you don't compromise, or does it largely depending on who is, I guess, working with you?
Yeah, that's a great question. that's really something I talk about a lot, just in my work. You know, it depends for sure. There, you know, I make my standard personal work a certain way, and in a way that I think is, you know, thin enough to function well, but also so it's durable. You know, and it's not, you know, you're not going to just put it in the sink and it's going to break. But if I'm working with a chef or someone who's, you know, going to be purchasing pieces for maybe a specific event or a specific dish, a lot of it is driven by their vision. I will definitely, you know, chime in on, function and, you know, where things are going to be stored in a kitchen is like a big kind of point of contention. A lot of times if the kitchens are small, and they're really trying to order work that's going to be used on the regular in a restaurant, that's like a big thing we talk about. We talk about the table size, a lot of times, just because sometimes chefs are like, I want a 14-inch plate. And I'm like, your table is never going to be able to fit multiples of these for, you know, a diner to sit down, you know, for two people to eat off of these plates on a table. It's going to be super cramped. So, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. So it's, it is mainly driven by, you know, the buyer. And I think, you know, they start a conversation with me based on my aesthetic and kind of what I make. And then we alter from there. But also the really fun thing about doing these kind of collaborations with chefs and designers is that they really challenge you just as a maker, to work out of your comfort zone. You know, they obviously like your work and like your style. But they, you know, are sometimes dreaming up these really challenging pieces that make it super fun. And I think that that's the thing that I really like. I like the challenge of that and working with someone and them saying, can you make this thing? This is what I'm envisioning. And that's, that to me is like, it's great. It's great for my brain. It's great for my process. So I feel like that's a really lucky part of collaborating.
What's your favorite piece of work that you've done in the past or so far? And why?
So I did those mugs, that large order. I think those to date are probably some of my favorite because I actually ended up working at that facility as the GM, and hospitality director there. Okay. So I got to witness them in use, day to day, when guests were coming. So, you know, it was, you know, I was running this retreat facility and I had made a bunch of work for them. And, I think that was, that to date has been the best just because you don't necessarily get to see your pieces in use all the time. And watching people pick the mug off the shelf that they want to use, and really like hold it a certain way and, drink from it a certain way was really special to see and to kind of watch. And it was the first, you know, big order that I had done, in a studio since moving back. So it was kind of like okay, you're doing a good job. Like people like your work. And just, you know, I think seeing people use your objects, I think is really, really special. You know, they're, was a time, you know, when people had dinnerware sets that stayed in cupboards that only got brought out, you know, during holidays. And it's like, we're going to leave this in the cupboard all year until a certain holiday, until grandma comes over and then we're going to bring out the good china. But I think now, you know, there's this movement where, you know, people are making work that is meant to be used and it's meant to be handled. And I think that is a really beautiful and special thing. And so being able to witness that, I think that is why that's probably my favorite work to date so far, just because I got to see, you know, I got to see it in use and, you know, in action. So,
So and as of now, sorry, I'm really curious about like the operational aspects of, you being your, like a solo ceramic artist and then having to fulfill these orders. So for that large order, I think you mentioned the quantity is 130. How long did it take you?
So, I mean, it was 150. I mean, because the order was placed, you know, pretty in advance, I got to make them, you know, not at a super, super speedy rate, but, you know, I mean, I can go into the studio and throw, you know, 40 or 50 or more cups in a day. So production wise, like it could get done relatively quickly. It was nicer because it was my first large order. I got to take a little bit of time and understand the process of it and, you know, really how to kind of roll out that much work. You know, so with throwing, you know, once you kind of you pick up on the muscle memory of it and how to do it, you know, as a little production potter, you know, it becomes quicker to make pieces faster. But, you know, it just depends on the lead time. You know, I think 2 to 4 weeks is really kind of the reality of if someone wants something that is not already made,
right.
You know, just because it takes time to fire things and it goes through, you know, the firing process twice. And, you know, there's just, like I said, there's variables that happen. So
what was the transition like going from not working in the studio full-time to now you're full-time? How did you find your own studio and what was the operational side of things, setting it up? What was it like?
So I am very, very lucky. I am still working out of that original studio that I landed in. She's actually expanding January 1st. I will have a private studio space in the studio that she's expanding into. So right now I've still been working in smaller space. And then this transition happened November 1st and she was looking to expand and things just very much lined up. It was kind of like,
that is awesome.
A meant to be thing. And right now, you know, it's great because this is new, working, you know, out of someone else's studio that's already set up that has kilns and just things are already there. It's just making this a lot easier, which is great. I mean, the dream definitely is to have my own studio. It's just, you know, it is a lot of setup and a lot of work. And right now I can kind of judge how things are going and I can make adjustments and, you know, really kind of concentrate on product right now and, you know, putting the time and money and energy, you know, into making product. So I feel really lucky.
Have you started selling your products online or in stores now?
So my website is currently being built, which is very exciting. I was going to try and tackle it myself, and just got to a place where I just didn't want to. I was like, you know what? I know I can do this. I know how to do this. I've done this before, but it was one of those things where you have to kind of pick and choose where your time is best spent. And I was like, mine is not best spent building a website. So I have an amazing, amazing friend who I worked with at a previous job who did my branding for my logo. And she has just an incredible eye for all things design, and she creates stunning websites. So she is currently building out my website right now, and you know, it's a bit slow, but it's good. It's kind of giving me time to figure out how I want that to be set up, and you know, how much I want to be stocking on it all the time. I'm really trying to kind of do larger commission work. That's the end goal, and to start really making some steps to get some work in some other restaurants and go that route.
Let me see if I understand this correctly. So you were part-time, doing this part-time, and then this opportunity came up and now you do this full-time, and I assume you quit your career in restaurant not long ago. Is that correct?
It is November 1st. Everything happened on November 1st.
it's an anniversary.
Yeah, anniversary. Exactly. Yeah.
Did it take you very long, or like were you ever anxious about, you know, actually having to decide on making that leap of faith almost?
Yeah, what made you decide, okay, it's going to be this day and we're just going to make a switch on this day?
Yeah. You know, I think I was starting to get more traffic and more people asking me about making work and more people asking me for, you know, dinnerware sets. And, it just kind of all happened fluidly. The retreat center I was working at, we were going to shut down for the winter. And I just kind of saw that as a sign to start to transition out. And, you know, I'm in a position where I live in a really amazing community, and people are, you know, pretty generous with offering, you know, supplemental income and work. And I've done some hospitality consulting in the area. So there are some people who are trying to start some hospitality projects who are inquiring for consulting. So I'm just in a really good space where I can do this full time, but I can still supplement income in other areas, which is really nice. But this is where I am full time. So it's feeling very well balanced at this point.
That's amazing. I feel like I don't hear that from that many people that, you know, like when usually when some people decide they make the switch, usually they go through this mental kind of, I don't know how to call it. Like they're usually very nervous for quite some time, or usually it takes people a while to actually get the courage to even decide that they're going to switch. And, and for some people it's, you know, takes months, if not years. And it's really good to hear like a, you know, a great story, you know,
like a smooth
great
and easy transition everything all lined up. So I'm so glad that you're sharing that with us, because we definitely don't hear that every day.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think, I saw that as an opportunity, and I also realize how lucky I am as well. It's not easy every day, but it's easy most days. And I have a lot of really good support from friends and family. And yeah, I think, you know, part of it is just letting go and trying, you know, for someone like me, I'm, a bit of a control freak, just because I've worked in, you know, upper management positions where I've had to be the person who just like manages all the situations all the time. I think take a step back and realizing that sometimes you have to just like let go of what you thought your life was going to be, what you think your life may turn into, and just let things unfold and happen as they're supposed to. And it's hard. I mean, it's real hard to do that, because it's nerve wracking and it's not stable, and it's scary. But I do really think that you know, things happen for a reason, and I feel very, very lucky that I have had such an easy transition, because I know that most people don't when they're not only just changing careers, but just like changing jobs and, you know, positions within companies. So I definitely recognize that as, as I feel super lucky.
What are some of your tips, and how did you get people to notice you when you were just starting out?
A lot of it has been word of mouth. A lot of it's been through social media. You know, that I think the, you know, beautiful thing about social media is that it's accessible for a lot of people. And if you can use it as a tool and use it correctly, it is such a good resource to, you know, get your business and kind of what you're doing out into the world and into, you know, out into the atmosphere. But I also think, just really believing that you have a good product and a solid product, and truly, truly like loving it and believing it, is also, I think, part of the battle, you know, and being confident in being able to sell it, and also understanding market and understanding who your target market is, and, you know, who your audience is. And, you know, so for me, it's like people that are going to like my work are, you know, people who are design driven, who live kind of simple, maybe minimalistic lives, who like design and modern design and, you know, mid-century modern furniture and Scandinavian design. So I think understanding who to target as well is a big part of it. And obviously, like I said, you know, this is pretty new for me so far. So, but that's what I found is to be helpful is understanding that.
Okay. Did you do some research and find that this is going to be, some like the people that are going to be drawn to your design, or you actually prefer these styles?
So it was a bit of both. So I think obviously my aesthetic, my personal aesthetic is driven through my work as well. And that's, you know, those are kind of my styles. So my style is like less is more, you know, having, you know, spending a little bit more money on objects and things that you really love and having less of them, and also being able to support local makers is really important to me. So that's something that I'm trying to get across in my work for sure. But then also really kind of doing R&D research in the area that I am, because I'm located about 2 hours north of New York City. There is a lot of traffic here and a lot of traffic in the area, and also a lot of new restaurants that are popping up and, you know, new restaurants that are wanting handmade pottery in, you know, in their places of business. So, I also feel like I'm just in a really good area for makers right now and for people who are doing art. So that is also very lucky. So
for somebody who wants to say, set up their own studio and do something that you're doing, what does it take? Like, what does it look like? What do they have to do?
A lot of it is the equipment that you're going to purchase to put in your studio. That's a big part of it. Obviously, getting to a place where you can make and produce work and make art that financially gives you good margins. That's a huge part of it. But then setting up a home studio, you know, there are a couple ways you can go about it. You know, you don't necessarily have to have kilns or that type of equipment. You know, you most likely could find a studio potentially close to wherever you are making to fire your work, but definitely having, if you were going to throwing, you know, having a wheel, having clay and wedging tables, and, you know, there's a lot of equipment that's involved in starting a studio. But you know, you can create work with just buying clay and a simple toolkit, you know, if you wanted to just have that as a starting point. So, yeah.
I see. And a kiln, you have to, it's not something you can purchase, right?
So you can, yeah. Oh. So yeah, there's gas and electric kilns. The electric kilns are easier to use for most people because they're computerized and you just basically, you know, set a program and your work goes in it and it fires it off automatically for you, where a gas kiln is atmospheric. So you really have to control the temperature and the time, and there's a lot more involved just in terms of watching it and babysitting it, and fires to a hotter temperature, and you know, there's just a lot more involved with that. And so people do, yeah, there are companies that sell these kilns. They're already set up and ready to go. You do have to vent them just because there are off gases that happen in the firing process. So putting them in a space that, is vented and that just knowing that the kilns are firing, you know, upwards and over 2000 degrees. So, whatever floor surface you're putting them on needs to be, you know, protected, and they have to be away from, you know, anything that is a fire hazard, like anything, you know, wood or anything that's really kind of can get hot.
So you probably have to rent a space for this.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, it should not be in your house at all. Yeah. So most people do build some sort of like external structure on their property or rent spaces. So you could put up, you know, you could put up some sort of like shed structure or, you know, outside structure if you had property. But a lot of people too are just, you know, renting studio spaces in, you know, there are a lot of like old factory buildings in the city that I live, and a lot of the buildings have been converted into artist studios and lofts. So there are people who are converting those into ceramic studios.
And so you would just rent to use it for like a couple hours.
If you wanted to set up your own like personal studio, then, you know, it would be like a regular rental unit. So you would rent, by month, but yeah, the studio that I work in, there are classes that are offered and open studio and shelf rentals. So you can basically go in and pay like a monthly price and have full access to the studio as well. And, you know, take classes and you get kind of everything included in those pricing. The studio that I'm in is, it's $135 a month, which gives you, one shelf in the studio, but also gives you, you know, gives you full access to the studio 6 days a week, pretty much 24 hours. And you have access to clay and glaze, and then you pay, anytime you want to actually fire work, there's like a kind of formula, like a calculation that gets done. You measure your piece, and then there's a, you know, a percentage that's charged off that calculation, to fire your work.
And I guess you have to kind of, do you have to time it with other people's schedule, or you get the whole kiln to yourself?
It depends on how much work you're making. Like if you're producing a lot of work, you can rent out an entire kiln, or you can rent a half kiln, or, you know, if you're only, you only need like four or five pieces fired, then you can just pay basically per piece. And then when the kilns are firing in the studio, your work just goes in.
I see. Okay. Wow. That's a lot of things to think about if you want to be a ceramic artist.
Yes, lots of factors.
And so far, would you say your income is pretty stable?
At the moment, it is not stable, just because I'm still kind of figuring out pricing structure. But you know, the great thing is from what I've sold and what I, you know, the prices that I've kind of given to people for dinnerware sets, it's good money. It's a lot of work and time, but you know, part of it doesn't feel like that because it's so lovely and enjoyable to be in the studio and making, which I think is also part of it. So it's super nice.
Lauren, it sounds like you're at such a happy place right now with your own professional development. But I'm curious if there are anything or anything at all that you missed from your past life, you know, like whether it was like more in the fine dining setting or more like when you were in that management level, because it's quite a different shift, you know, from managing people to now managing your day to day and then, you know, trying to do a lot of things by yourself.
I think there is part of me that, you know, misses having an income that's very stable and that you know is gonna be coming in regularly. I think that that was a hard switch. I was like, okay, so now I don't have a salary anymore. So how does that work? Just in terms of, you know, the life that I've kind of set up and where I am in terms of like being comfortable and what I like to do and the things I like to spend money on. So that's part of it. And also just, I think it's a lot of self-motivation now, and I've always been pretty self-motivated, but not having a job that you have to show up to at a certain time, every day is, that can be challenging. You know, just making sure that you're really kind of managing your time efficiently, and effectively. And for me, being busier, makes it easier for me to fit more things into my day. And I know that sounds weird, but like living and dying by my Google Calendar is a huge part of that. And just making sure that I am making use of my time effectively, because this is new and, you know, the income isn't black and white. So that's, you know, that's definitely challenging. And that's something I think that was a bit hard for sure. Just not having structure, I think can be challenging for a lot of people. And it's definitely something that I've been adjusting to. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
I don't know if you necessarily did like some kind of an estimate on, you know, like what are some of the changes that you would go through, like income wise, and then also like maybe like time management wise, from working at the management level to all of a sudden essentially working for yourself. You know, even though you don't own a studio yet, but you essentially have your own brand, you're selling your own products, and you're working with people that are, you know, buying products from you that are handmade by you. Did you think very hard about, you know, how maybe like for how much time you're going to be hit by, like financially or, time-wise it's going to be unstable? 'Cause I think a lot of people, sometimes think a little too much about, you know, oh, my income's going to go down to zero for maybe 6 months, 'cause I probably can't find anything with like the new skills I'm trying to learn and things like that. And a lot of times that can be very daunting. So people don't even begin to move towards what they want to do, 'cause it just sounds very scary. But I wonder if you like had that self-talk in your head at all.
Yeah. Definitely a few times. I mean, I think that's probably the number one that most people are concerned about. I think going from, you know, a paycheck that's coming in regularly, you know, to your bank account, and you know that's stable. You know how much money you're going to make every month, and you know what your expenses are, and so everything's pretty dialed. I think for me, you know, I'm pretty strategic with finding, you know, supplemental income when I need to. And because I've worked in an industry that's quite easy to pick up work here and there. I also worked for a landscape design company for a while. So that's, you know, another kind of field that has definitely helped kind of in the transition of things, just being able to pick up work every now and then. But I think the biggest thing is just, you know, you have to like make the jump at some point, you know? So, if it's something that you really want to do, you know, looking at kind of what your baseline expenses are and trying to say like, okay, in 6 months, I'll have enough money to live for 6 months. And so I could potentially do this. You know, I think most people live probably above their means, and most people live a little bit more extravagantly than they need to. And I think that if it's something that you really want to do, you'll cut out the things that you don't need in your life. You know, I don't need to go out to dinner 3 days a week. I don't need to go on a vacation in the next 6 months. I don't need, you know, so it's really just kind of, I think, understanding if this is your goal to start a business or to, you know, shift paths, that things are going to have to be cut out and things are going to have to shift. And a lot of times the shifts happen financially, you know, just because that is not the stable thing anymore.
So I guess I have my one last question. And it's like a question that I like to ask people. It's sort of like a mental exercise that I like to take people with me. But basically what I want to find out is that, so in the past, you've done many things. You've worked in hospitality, you've opened your own restaurants, and you've done consulting work, and now you're on your own. You have a ceramic studio. And so what do you think with all these experience, you know, under your belt, what do you think you could do in the future? Say you want to potentially switch again, what could that look like for you?
Ooh, well, you know, I think, you know, kind of working with people and customer service is always kind of been a line that's in what I do, and, you know, mm-hmm. managing people. And I really do like consulting work. I think that mm-hmm. that's something that if I did want to fall into something full time again, that would probably be the space that I would start to move into, mm-hmm. Just in terms of experience. And, you know, I think for me, like being able to help people and guide people in beginning stages of projects with the knowledge mm-hmm. that I've acquired over the last, you know, 12 to 15 years in restaurants and hospitality, I think is really fun. Mm-hmm. And it's really exciting. And for me, it's really exciting to work with people that are also really excited about starting new projects. So I think if I ever transitioned into something again, that would probably be the full-time switch.
Okay. Thank you. I think that's probably all of our questions. Angela, do you have any more questions?
Probably something that's kind of unrelated. So more like a chit chat kind of question. So we can probably do that later after, Dana, you wrap up.
Oh, sure. So actually one last question is that, where can people find you?
So on Instagram right now, mm-hmm. and, my website is, I just have a landing page on it right now with a contact. Right. Information. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, but it's laceramicstudio.com. Mm.
Okay, great. So, and we'll link everything in the notes.
Great. Amazing.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a question for you guys. How long have you been doing this podcast for?
Oh, so we actually have been recording since April actually, but we didn't launch until September because we kind of had a difficult year. We had some family emergency. Our dad, actually, we're sisters. I don't know if we mentioned
I don't think
that
we did our proper intro.
No.
You didn't.
Yeah.
But, we should back up and do the intro.
Yeah. So we're sisters. And actually, we're kind of, you know, like a couple, like 10 years into our career. And we're kind of approaching this differently. But Angela is interested. Well, she's interested in this topic because she wants to switch out of what she's doing right now. She just got out of a boot camp. And so that's where she's headed. She wants to get into tech. And for me, I kind of just hit a point in my career where I started to think maybe it's time for me to change. And the easiest thing for me to do is to ask people. So I ask people around me, and I decided that this is probably a good topic that I can share with people online. So we actually started as a blog, but earlier this year, Angela just suggested that, hey, maybe we should do a podcast because you start with talking to people, you know, and this is the first step. So, so that's why we started. Actually, it was a suggestion.
Awesome.
And so, yeah, so it, it's, So we're really new to this space. It's it's kind of scary. It's really scary, and everything is new. So yeah, we've only been doing this for honestly a couple of months, and we only just launched in the middle of September. So it's just barely 2 months, and we try to aim about once a week. We upload an interview. And so, but sometimes it kind of depends on how busy we are, but for the most part, we're kind of able to do that.
Great. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of fun.
I'm personally mm-hmm. really excited to hear one story where, you know, for the most part, there's not been anything too difficult, too anxious. No one's too worried about making the switch. Cause I feel like the entire time you just sound extremely calm and you're really happy where you are. And all of the different transition points, when you told us your story, just flowed so well that mm-hmm. I wish that was my transition. I think that gives a really great message to people, right? Cause you know, a lot of the times and more often than not, you hear stories about people that are, oh, I want to move to, you know, maybe like a management role, or like, I want to move to like a higher paying industry because, you know, obviously the incentive is there. But for someone to say, you know, I moved away from a management level position and, you know, because I felt like there was a need that, or like, there was like a hole that wasn't being filled by what I was doing, but the entire transition was so smooth almost. And, you know, it was almost like amazingly smooth and easy. And I just love that because I feel like more people should feel that, you know, transition doesn't have to be hard. And I want to give people more exposure to those kind of stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, I mean, like I said, it's, I feel really lucky that it kind of all has been unfolding and happening the way it has been. And I do kind of recognize that that's not a thing that happens all the time with people. So, you know, so I really am trying to just embrace it and also, support other people who are kind of going through similar things. And people are really excited about, you know, asking questions and finding out like how it all happened. And, and I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of days where I'm like, what am I doing? But most days, you know, I'm like, okay, this is okay. And also, I think knowing that if it like doesn't totally work out, you know, you still have all your skills that you had before, and you still have all the jobs that are on your resume from before. So you can still get back into something, you know, and it might not be, exactly what you want to do, but I think that making a leap and feeling like also that if it's not successful, that's okay. You know, I think that that's, I think that many people are just so scared of failure. And that's, I think something in American society that's been so like drilled into our brains that you go to school and you get this degree and you have to like go on this career path and like, there's no veering from it. And really at the end of the day, you know, happiness and, you know, being happy, we spend so much time working. We spend so much time at our jobs, and you should enjoy it, you know? And I know that it's like a strange concept for a lot of people and that work is just work, but I also think that it can be enjoyable and fulfilling. And and like I said, if it doesn't work, you know, you can go back to the things that you were doing before. It's not like, it's not this like life threatening, like your world is going to be over and end thing. And I think that's what a lot of people think. So I think just going about it with like, hey, I'm going to try this new thing. And, you know, hopefully it's good and, you know, I can figure it out, but also I'm a smart human. And if I have to make some changes or alterations, I can do that too.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Did you find that you have to do like, or like really put yourself out there once you decide to move or, you know, make that move? Because I think a lot of the times when people transition, like their own network doesn't really know that they've switched or their interest has changed. So how did you kind of reintroduce people around you to your new role? Was it hard? Was it awkward?
You know, not really. I think people, so when I moved back to the States, people knew that I was starting to work in a studio again, like make work in a studio again. So people knew that I was kind of like, you know, I was playing, like I was playing in the studio. I was making pieces. You know, people would see my stuff. They'd be excited about it. But, you know, I think a lot of the people who are around here who have known me in these upper management positions and kind of seen just my speed in the restaurants and in these other projects and kind of like just the level that I work at. I think, you know, when I was like, you know, I'm really thinking about jumping into doing this ceramic thing full time, most people were like, oh yeah, you got to do it. Like you have to. Or, you know, if I'm like, yeah, I was like thinking about potentially doing my own hospitality project at one point. And there is a lot of support. You know, I think that that's the really great thing about building up a community is that people are excited for you and they want to like know how to support you and how to help you. And that's been a really kind of beautiful thing about this area and living around here is people, you know, it's a small community and people are really excited to see people moving into spaces that make them happy. So it's been great.
That's amazing.
Now, that's a wonderful point that, you know, surround yourself with people that really support you regardless of what you do, not necessarily looking at your title or how much you're making or what industry or what company you're working for, but more like, you know, if they know that you're working towards something that makes you happy, then, you know, they're just going to be there to support you and, you know, nothing more, nothing less.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very, it's a good key for life, for friends.
So I think that's it for in terms of the all the questions. Okay, we'll be in touch. Thank you, Lauren.
Okay, yeah, thank you guys so much. This was awesome. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good rest
Have
of your
a good
day.
Night.
Okay, bye guys.
Bye.
That's it for this episode and thank you for listening. Be sure to subscribe for more interviews and check out our other social media for more content. We are on Medium, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. You can find all the links in our profile. Leave us a message, tell us what you think and what you want to hear more of. Once again, thank you for listening and I hope this inspires you to be the change you wish to be and pave the way for more fulfilling careers. Good luck.